Art can be beautiful. That is all it has to do. That is the only thing we require of it. But what do we mean by beauty? Did the cave dwellers think, hey, that's really beautiful, when someone drew the first bison on the wall? Did anyone think, that's beautiful, when the Serbian performance artist Marina Abramović invited the gallery audience to cut her with razor blades or shoot her? Critics and philosophers have devoted their entire lives to defining beauty, while artists have pursued it from another part of the brain. Is there a meaning of beauty on which we can agree? Is a Netherlandish portrait beautiful? What about Vermeer's The Love Letter, Cézanne's Apples? Perhaps it would be possible to know nothing about art, to have never seen a painting, and to look at any one of those works and think, well, that is really gorgeous. But what about those early viewers who saw Cézanne's Apples as the smudgy scrawlings of an untalented child? What about Jackson Pollock? It took me years to see the beauty in his paintings. When I say that there is nothing so beautiful as a certain phrase in Bach's St. Matthew Passion, or Mozart's Così fan tutte, or Miles Davis's flamenco sketches, or Mary Wells's version of You Beat Me to the Punch, what am I saying exactly? Unraveling the word beauty can get us so ensnarled that it's no wonder that for a time, critics and academics and even some artists agreed that it was probably better not to use it at all. For all I know, I haven't kept up, this taboo still exists. And really, who can blame anyone for not wanting to sling around this vague, loaded, indefinable, and antiquated term in the learned journals? Though it does seem a little strange to ban the word from the conversations of people for whom it is a matter of life and death. The Greeks, at least, had some ideas. Order, harmony, structure. But all of that had gotten a radical shaking up even by the time of, let's say, Hieronymus Bosch. If we think the Apollo Belvedere is beautiful, what do we say about the naked bottom and legs of a man emerging from a strawberry and scurrying around Bosch's Garden of Earthly Delights? Obviously, content is only a fraction of what matters. There's beauty of conception and beauty of execution, which is, to oversimplify, part of what makes Cézanne's apples different from the apples we doodle on our notepad or the scribblings of a child. Conception and execution are major factors in the narratives on the page and screen that I tend to remember as beautiful. For example, I find great beauty in the scene in Mavis Gallant's story, The Ice Wagon Going Down the Street, in which the self-deluded and heartbreakingly sad office worker at the League of Nations in post-World War II Geneva is asked to take home a mousy co-worker who has gotten drunk at a costume party. What happens, nothing happens, may well be the most important event in their lives, yet one of them thinks that the nothing that happened was about the two of them not having sex, while the other thinks that nothing happened meant that she didn't commit suicide, as she seems to have considered doing. There is a startling and deeply melancholy scene in the great Hungarian writer Dezső Kosztolányi's novel Skylark. An elderly couple's beloved, burdensome, unmarried 35-year-old daughter has gone away on vacation, freeing them for a week of unaccustomed pleasures and shattering realizations about their domestic life. On her return, they go to greet her at the station. Dressed in an unflattering rain cape and a silly hat, and carrying a scruffy pigeon, her new pet, in a cage, she is even homelier than they remember, just as she is even more intensely the love of their life and their jailer. Suddenly they notice that autumn has arrived. A desolate boredom settled over everything. The warm days are over. Why should that seem beautiful? And why should I be so taken with the moment in Mike Leigh's film Life is Sweet when Timothy Spall, as the sublimely geeky Aubrey, opens a restaurant, a bistro called the Regret Rien, fashioned on an Edith Piaf theme, très exclusive. On opening night, no customers come, and Aubrey, who has been drinking wine as he waits for the non-existent onslaught of diners, trashes the place and winds up passed out on the floor, stripped down to a pair of unnervingly creepy Speedos. Why do I love the marvelous scene in Francis Ford Coppola's The Godfather, in which Sonny speaks out of turn and the Tartaglia family knows that the Corleones are vulnerable and can be attacked? And why do I think there is beauty in every moment of Michael K. Williams' portrayal of Omar Little in David Simon's TV series The Wire?